Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
The renegade Libyan general survived the assassination attempt, and the U.S. urges accountability and transparency for a new Egyptian leader. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. A rogue Libyan general, Khalifa Haftar, survived an assassination attempt at his residence in the city of Benghazi, where he's been leading an offensive against Islamist militants. Military officials say a suicide bomber drove a vehicle packed with explosives to the Haftar compound gate today. Three soldiers were killed and several others were wounded, including the Libyan Air Force Chief of Staff. Haftar was unhurt in the explosion, and no one has claimed responsibility for that attack. The United States is calling on Egypt's president-elect Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to carry out reforms to ensure the government is accountable and transparent while protecting the universal rights of all Egyptians. A White House statement today says President Barack Obama plans to speak with Sisi in the coming days. Following the official announcement, the Army Chief of Staff won 97% of the vote in last week's election. Egypt's Election Commission estimated 47% of eligible voters took part in the election. Nigerian officials are denying a report that 15 officers, including 10 generals, have been court-martialed for cooperating with Boko Haram militants. The Leadership newspaper reported the officers were found guilty of giving information and ammunition to the radical Islamist group, which is blamed for thousands of deaths over the past 5 years. Today, two officials, a military spokesman and a government communications officials, told VOA that the report is not true. U.S. President Barack Obama says the world must stand with those who seek freedom, as he drew parallels between reforms taking place in Ukraine and the elections in Poland 25 years ago that marked the beginning of the end of communist rule. Speaking today at a Freedom Day event in Warsaw, Mr. Obama hailed Poland's first partially free election in 1989 as a landslide victory for freedom. He said now the free world is united against what he called Russia's dark tactics in Ukraine, where in March, Russian forces seized control of Crimea.
Bigger nations must not be allowed to bully the small or impose their will at the barrel of a gun or with masked men taking over buildings. And the stroke of a pen can never legitimize the theft of a neighbor's land. So we will not accept Russia's occupation of Crimea or its violation of Ukraine's sovereignty. Our free nations will stand united so that further Russian provocations will only mean more isolation and cost for Russia.
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin is denying any plans to annex or destabilize southeastern Ukraine. In an interview today with France TVF One television channel and Europe One radio station, Vladimir Putin said there has never been and there are no Russian military units or military instructors in southeastern Ukraine. The Afghan Taliban has released a video showing its fighters handing over captured American soldier Bo Bergdahl to the U.S. military in the province that borders Pakistan on Saturday. Ayaz Ghul has details.
The Taliban video shows U.S. Army Sergeant Bergdahl waiting in a white pickup truck surrounded by heavily armed Taliban fighters. As a commentator narrates the events, a clean-shaven Bergdahl is seen with a close-cropped haircut, wearing a white shalwar kameez, the traditional Afghan clothing. He blinks frequently as he looks at and listens to his captors. As Black Hawk helicopters circle overhead, one lands nearby and the captive soldier is then led to his rescuers by two men, one taking Bergdahl by the hand as the other waves a white flag. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
A suspected suicide bomber has detonated explosives near a military vehicle, killing five people near the Pakistani capital. Officials say two military officers are among those killed in the Wednesday attack in the city of Rawalpindi. Investigators say there were three other victims were civilians. There were no immediate claims of responsibility. Tens of thousands of people have turned out in Hong Kong for a vigil marking the 25th anniversary of the bloody crackdown on protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. A sea of candles lit the massive Victoria Park late today as throngs gathered to sing songs and listen to speeches, marking the massacre that ended the 1989 pro-democracy movement in China. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehia Swuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Doctors Without Borders says the ongoing Ebola outbreak is resurging in Guinea and neighboring Sierra Leone. The virus has killed about 2,200 people since it appeared in southeastern Guinea in February.
That's VOA's Anne Look reporting from Dakar. Details coming up.
Also in the news, Nigerian officials deny a report that 15 officers, including 10 generals, have been court-martialed for cooperating with Boko Haram militants. And the U.S. is investing more than $1 billion to create about 20 million new electricity connections in sub-Saharan Africa.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Nigerian officials are denying a report that 15 officers, including 10 generals, have been court-martialed for cooperating with Boko Haram militants. The Leadership newspaper reported the officers were found guilty of giving information and ammunition to the radical Islamist group, which is blamed for thousands of deaths over the past 5 years. Today, two officials, military spokesman Major General Chris Alokolade and government communications official Mike Olmeri, both told VOA that the report is not true. Nigeria's government has struggled to contain Boko Haram despite a state of emergency in the northeast and deployment of thousands of troops to the area. The group has attacked schools, markets, places of worship, and military bases. Witnesses say the militants sometimes dress in military uniforms and often have more firepower than soldiers. Boko Haram is still holding more than 200 schoolgirls it kidnapped from a school in Borno State in mid-April.
In Libya, a spokesman for Khalifa Haftar says the former army chief was not hurt in a suicide bombing today at his home in Benghazi, but four others died in the attack and three were wounded. Among the wounded is Libyan Air Force Chief of Staff Sakr al-Garushi. No word of his condition. The bomber detonated the high explosives at the general's front gate. Haftar served as army chief under the late ruler Muammar Gaddafi. He recently gained support from Libyan militant units in a three-week military campaign against Ansar al-Sharia and other militant Islamists in eastern Libya. 18 died in clashes in Benghazi yesterday. Meanwhile, the Libyan government remains in chaos. The General National Congress is divided between Islamists and non-Islamists. Their newly appointed Prime Minister, Ahmed Meiteg, held his first cabinet meeting yesterday under armed guards while his predecessor, Abdullahi Al-Tini, refused to relinquish power.
Doctors Without Borders says the ongoing Ebola outbreak is resurging in Guinea and neighboring Sierra Leone. The virus has killed about 200 people since it appeared in southeastern Guinea in February. Health workers appear to be making progress against the outbreak, but Guinea and Sierra Leone are now reporting fresh cases, some of them in areas previously unaffected by the disease. VOA's Anne Look has more from Dakar.
Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, says it has seen more than 20 new cases of Ebola at its treatment centers in Guinea since last week alone. The total number of suspected new cases is believed to be higher. MSF says areas like the capital, Conakry, and the towns of Gwekweju in Masenta, near the border with Liberia, have seen a spike in the number of new patients. But Ebola is also cropping up in previously untouched towns, like Telemele, just north of the capital, and the coastal town of Bofa. MSF Director of Operations Bart Janssens says this geographical spread is a problem.
It clearly indicates that the epidemic is not at all under control, as we might have hoped sort of 1 or 2 weeks ago when we really saw cases continually going down over time.
He says people should seek treatment as soon as they show symptoms or if they believe they have been exposed. The Ebola virus is spread through direct contact with the bodily fluids of an infected person, and the virus can be transmitted even after that person dies. Health workers say families moving bodies for funerals have been a factor in the spread of the disease. It can take up to 3 weeks for symptoms to appear. The symptoms include fever, vomiting, body aches, and uncontrollable bleeding. There is no cure. Health workers try to isolate suspected cases. MSF's Janssen says some people do recover with medical care.
People are afraid to come out and that it's difficult to identify all cases and also to track the contacts of these cases. These people travel to other sites, either because they do not know they're sick or either because they want to get away from places where they can be identified.
The ongoing outbreak in West Africa has had about a 70% fatality rate. Those who have survived, as well as relatives of those who have died, report being stigmatized by their communities. The outbreak spread into border areas of Liberia and Sierra Leone in April. Liberia has not reported any new cases in a month. That is not the case for Sierra Leone. MSF says it is setting up a new clinic there in the town of Kwandu, near the border with Guinea. One person confirmed to have Ebola and three others suspected of having the disease died in Kwandu this week. Sierra Leone's health ministry had reported 18 possible new cases there at the end of May. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
A government crackdown on Muslim militants in the Kenyan port city of Mombasa is making the work of human rights advocates and moderate Muslim clerics more difficult as they face danger both from security forces and radical youths. For VOA, Muhammad Yusuf reports.
In March, two gunmen stormed a church in Mombasa's Likoni neighborhood and opened fire, killing four worshippers and injuring 15 others. Days later, City Commissioner Nelson Marua called for his officers to execute terror suspects behind the church attack and those roaming in the streets targeting innocent people. The commissioner was condemned by human rights campaigners who also called for his resignation. A week later, the commissioner said he was putting the campaigners on notice as they planned to protest the killing of controversial cleric Abu Bakar Sharif Ahmed, also known as Makaburi. Khalid Hussein is the head of Haki Africa, a rights group, whose name in Swahili means justice. He says security officials should not vent their anger and frustrations at human rights campaigners.
We feel that the government is under a lot of pressure, and understandably so, because security of any kind, insecurity of this nature, would put anyone under frustration. But we get very, very concerned when the government authorities take it out on civil society groups that are actually trying to help.
Mombasa has witnessed a wave of terror attacks and killing of suspected terror suspects. Fingers are being pointed at security officers, an accusation strongly denied by the government. As the threat and attacks increase, Hussein says it is becoming dangerous for rights activists to walk in the streets.
Even as human rights activists, we face threats almost on a daily basis because from government officers, sometimes communities that feel we need to do more. Sometimes we get, people asking us to come out more firmly and demand that justice be done. But when we tell them that, the wheels of justice move in their own pace, they don't get satisfied.
Some Muslim communities in Mombasa have been angered by radical youths taking over two influential mosques in the Majengo neighborhood. Late last year, hundreds of Muslim youths armed with knives invaded Sakina Mosque and ejected the clerics, holding the mosque under siege for more than 2 hours. The day of the attack, the Council of Imams and Preachers Chairman, Sheikh Mohammed Idris, was in the mosque giving summons, as he has for the past 35 years. Idris notes 6 months later the same youth still call the clerics names and accuse them of working with the government to oppress the Muslim community. He says the clerics were not competing with the youths in any way, do not insult them or talk bad about them, but they call the clerics bad names in the streets. Idris says the youths call the clerics hypocrites and call the Council of Imams and Preachers the Satan organization. 3 years ago, the CIPK and other Muslim organizations convened an Islamic conference to bring together top scholars to discuss whether fighting in neighbouring Somalia between militants group Al-Shabaab and the Somali government was a holy war. The scholars agreed there was no holy war in Somalia, and some clerics like Idris believe that conclusion may have angered the youths and supporters of Al-Shabaab. Sheikh Idris says that since he left the mosque, all the sermons are about jihad and how radical Muslims are treated by the government, nothing else.
Wallahi, darsa ambazo zinazotoka pale, kila mmoja anasikia.
He says the sermons are all about jihad and how the government is against and oppresses radicals. But Idris says when something goes wrong, it is important for people to sit, look at it very keenly, and call on people who are well-educated and understand the topic at hand. He asks if what is happening now continues, who will listen to whom? Kenya has troops in Somalia fighting Al-Shabaab. The Al-Qaeda linked group claimed responsibility for last year's assault on the Westgate Mall in Nairobi, in which more than 60 people were killed. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Mombasa.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. A rights group says park rangers and environmental activists in the DRC are receiving death threats after criticizing plans for oil exploration. Human Rights Watch says a British firm plans to explore for petroleum near and within Virunga National Park. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Virunga National Park has been declared a World Heritage Site by the United Nations, which says such sites belong to all the peoples of the world, irrespective of the territory on which they're located. Virunga also is home to many of the last mountain gorillas. The British oil firm Soko International is currently operating in eastern Congo, which has been plagued for decades by violence and conflict. Ida Sawyer says testimony about the alleged threats is being collected.
Human Rights Watch has documented numerous cases of Virunga Park rangers and human rights activists and environmental activists who have been threatened, arbitrarily arrested, or attacked after criticizing plans to explore for oil in the park.
Sawyer is Human Rights Watch's senior Congo researcher based in Kinshasa.
We've called on Congolese authorities to investigate these acts of violence and intimidation and to ensure that both the park rangers and the activists can express their views freely without risking their lives.
She says there are also many allegations of government officials receiving bribes. Sawyer says many of the rangers and activists believe oil exploration would harm Virunga National Park and the wildlife, as well as communities near the park.
However, many Congolese government officials support this exploration because of the potential financial gains oil could bring.
She says it's difficult to trace the origins of many of the threats, but says some, including death threats, allegedly were made at meetings with government officials or employees of the government's Institute for the Park. The DRC government has not yet responded to the Human Rights Watch report, but Soko International has. The group presented its findings to Soko prior to their release to the media.
They sent us a written response and they did deny any role in the threats of violence or bribery. They said they would look into the allegations of bribery in particular according to their procedures and their code of ethics, and they did condemn the use of violence and intimidation.
The company wrote that there have been a number of false and inaccurate allegations leveled against Soko International in recent years, particularly in the last month. It blames them on what it calls false, distorted, and/or exaggerated accounts of Soko activities in the DRC. It says those involved in alleged criminal activity have been branded Soko representatives, when simply they are not and have nothing to do with the company. Human Rights Watch has urged the British government to investigate allegations of attempted bribes of park rangers, activists, and officials. On April 15th, unknown gunmen shot and seriously wounded Virunga Park director Emmanuel de Merode, a Belgian national. Military and justice officials are investigating. No arrests have been made so far. Human Rights Watch has also asked the Belgian government to investigate.
Soon after that attack, a number of environmental and human rights activists who've done a lot of work on the park received threats.
She says those threats refer to the attack on Dema Road. She quotes one as saying, "Don't believe that just because we failed to get your director, that we are going to fail to get you." Human Rights Watch says it also met with the governor of North Kivu State, Julian Paluku, who told the group that some government and security officials had been, quote, manipulated. However, he said he did not know who was behind it. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhib. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Nigerian officials are denying a report that 15 officers, including 10 generals, have been court-martialed for cooperating with Boko Haram militants. Doctors Without Borders says the ongoing Ebola outbreak is resurging in Guinea and neighboring Sierra Leone. And the Obama administration is calling on newly elected Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to carry out much-needed government reforms. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237.
The Obama administration is calling on newly elected Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to carry out much-needed government reforms to protect the rights of its more than 86 million citizens. A White House statement released today said President Obama plans to talk with Mr. Sisi in the coming days and expressed his concern about the restrictive political environment during Egypt's election. Global reaction from other leaders was cautiously hopeful. A UN statement said Secretary General Ban Ki-moon trusts that the president-elect will do everything possible to support the people's aspirations for a stable, democratic, and prosperous Egypt. Saudi Arabia was more enthusiastic. The official daily newspaper Al Arabiya said King Abdullah congratulated Mr. al-Sisi and described the former Egyptian general's election as a historic day. King Abdullah is believed to be talking with the United Arab Emirates about offering a $20 billion aid package for Mr. Sisi's new government.
African coffee producers meeting in Cameroon are trying to reverse a long-term drop in production. Climate change, lack of government investment, and other factors have caused coffee production to drop as much as 70% in some countries over time. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Today, Africa contributes barely 10% of world coffee production, down from 40% in the 1980s. Cameroonian coffee exporter Buenda Arbet says the nosedive started when falling world prices and the economic crisis of the late 1980s and the early 90s made African governments stop giving financial assistance and training to coffee farmers.
Who are those involved in coffee production? You'll find out that they are the peasant farmers. And these are people who are not very knowledgeable with regard to what is happening in the international market. The government says we're no longer going to buy farm inputs for you. These are assignments that were carried out by the state. There was no transition in terms of bringing up the farmer, the peasant farmer, to be able to understand what it takes to sell on the international market.
The slump is also a result of changes in climate patterns, aging farms and farmers, and the fact that many countries started abandoning coffee production when they discovered petroleum and other mineral resources. Economist analyst Roger Betala tells VOA that tens of millions of Africans who made their livelihood through coffee production lost their jobs.
Lorsque le café a des problèmes, tous les intermédiaires, les torréfacteurs, les transporteurs...
He says when there is a problem with coffee, so many people on the production chain, like farmers and their laborers and transporters, suffer. He adds that a serious problem crops up when states cannot convert the unemployed workforce after drastic drops in coffee production, and consequently, the outcome is prejudicial. Betala says the drop in exports and rise in unemployment damaged some countries' economies.
Au Cameroun, par exemple, le café entrait dans la constitution du produit intérieur brut autour de 15 à 20.
He says in Cameroon, coffee contributed up to 30% of the gross domestic product, but today contributes only 1%. The meeting in Yaoundé aimed to map out ways of increasing coffee production by at least 50% in the next 2 years. Central African Economic and Monetary Community Agriculture Program researcher Bedimo Joseph says Africa must work with coffee production giants like Brazil, which today accounts for a third of the world's coffee production.
Nous avons dans nos collections, par exemple, quand je voudrais parler des collections de café arabica.
He says his program has 217 genotypes of Arabica coffee and are working with Brazilian and French researchers to improve coffee varieties to increase yields. John Schulter is with the non-governmental organization Coffee Africa. He says producers like Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Uganda, Ethiopia, and the Democratic Republic of Congo can attain the hoped-for results.
I have the conviction that African coffee is going to be one of the keys to the future supply of coffee to a world market which is drinking more and more coffee globally. According to the International Coffee Organization, there's going to be a gap in between the demand for coffee in 10 years' time and the supply. And Africa, with its potential to produce more coffee to get back to where it was 10, 20 years ago, has the potential to meet that gap.
Producers hope that research will improve crops, fertilizers and soil. They also plan to encourage young people to take up coffee farming and will ask governments to increase assistance. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Salih coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Health Network, a multimedia network reaching 50 million Africans weekly. We bring you relevant, reliable health news and information. We ask you about the health problems most important to you and inform you about health problems impacting your community. VOA Africa Health Network. Visit our website at www.africahealthnetwork.com.
Africa, I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports.
My name is Edward Ameyibo. I listen to Daybreak Africa to be abreast with developments on the continent. I encourage you to do the same.
You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.